We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What you described has been called the imposter syndrome. And we suffer from that. Am I good enough? Who the heck do I think I am? Starting my own business, writing my own book. Who's going to want to read it? Who's going to want to buy what I'm selling?
Oh my gosh, you have the same thoughts in your head as I do.
And how about this one, Jari? What if I get successful? If I get successful, then people are going to know. I really don't know what I'm talking about. And the reason you didn't know it was a thing is because it's not the thing that you talk to people about. So you're not talking to your fellow entrepreneurs. Hey, were you ever afraid of being discovered as a fraud? Of course you're not going to say that, because it puts you in such a vulnerable position. And kudos to you that you have a therapist that you talk to.
Yeah.
Because most people don't. And even if you do, sometimes it feels like we're not getting anywhere. It takes somebody, a particular personality type, to go into business. And so most people who have their own businesses are high power and achievement people. And they have to, by nature, be somewhat lower in survival, because if you're a survival person, you're looking for safety and security. And there is no safety and security, especially in the beginning, of owning your own business. It's a big question mark, a big guessing game.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Kim Olver, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Jari.
It is an honor to have you on the show, because I was on your show promoting my book, Ride or Die, and you were so kind to me we just had a great conversation. I'll also put a link to the stat in the show notes, because it is worth a listen.
It surely is. You were a great guest.
Yeah, it was really
great.
Yeah. Thank you. That means a lot to me. I try really hard. You're the founder of Olver International. You're a coach. Your goal is to eradicate self-created misery in the world, which I can resonate that with for sure. A lot of us entrepreneurs seem to be a little more misery prone when we're comparing ourselves to all the craziness in the world. And you have a new book coming out, which I'm love to talk about, titled Mental Freedom. But before we get into all the good stuff, as I always like to say, tell us how you got to do what you're doing today.
Well, that it's hard to know where to start with that, but
start wherever you'd like.
I always say that I have been a counselor practically my whole entire life. It started in fifth grade when all my friends and even people above me in sixth and seventh grade would call me up for advice, which is really comical, because what kind of advice can a fifth grader give? But somehow I was the go-to, and I loved it. And I always knew this is what I was going to do. So I went to college, studied psychology, got my master's degree in counseling, became a licensed clinical professional counselor. But I have really found that I think the counseling field is a little broken. And what I believe is, I'm not trying to diss counselors, because there's a lot of great counselors out there. But I think that our education tends to have us categorizing people under diagnoses, prescribing medication, or at least sending people to psychiatrists for medication, and kind of holding people's hands and taking them through their pain over and over and over again. And I have come to believe very strongly that humans are capable of healing themselves from whatever emotional traumas they are either have experienced or are experiencing, if they have the information they need to do that. So I've lived through a bit of challenging times in my own life. As you know, we are both members of that widow and widower club.
A membership no one wants.
That's right. That's right. Nobody wants to be a part of this club. But my husband passed away in 1999. He was 37, and I had two boys to finish raising. They were almost raised, 13 and 15. And so I got through that. That was, you know, that wasn't enough. And then my youngest son decided out of the blue, I say out of the blue because we don't have military service in our family background, but he decided he wanted to go to Iraq and be in the army and fight. And my son, Kyle, has always been and will probably die an adrenaline junkie. And it took 18 years of me working really hard to get him to live to be 18. And then he decided he wanted to go fight in a war, which they were only too happy to take him. And not only once, but twice. So I lived through his military service. He lived through it too, by the way, incidentally. But I made it through those
last
2 years.
Because, you know, when did he go in?
My son spent his 19th birthday in Iraq. So he went in right after graduation and went to, you know, basic training. Then he came home for Christmas, got his orders, went to desert training, and then he went to Iraq for a year. At that time, they were going for a year. And he went in 2005. That was the first time. So it was early in that war. We didn't have a lot of good communication.
No.
He had to wait in line to use one phone. And, you know, if my phone rang, I didn't care if I was in the middle of delivering a speech. I told him ahead of time, if my son calls, I'm taking it. And it was really funny because I got the call. He was coming home and I was speaking in front of a military audience and got a standing ovation.
I'm sure they know. I can't imagine.
It was really amazing.
So that was Gulf 2, not Gulf 1. Because Gulf 1 was...
Right, that was in the 90s.
Yeah, that was Bush. That was 91. That was Bush.
Yeah.
I call it Bush the First, which is silly. But yeah, that was... Because that's... So when I was in high school, I graduated 89. First Gulf War was 99. Mm. Bunch of buddies. Because I was already in college. Bunch of buddies went, you know. It's like, you know, I was 19 too. It's like, oh,
yeah.
I wonder if I'm going to get called up for this, you know? Wow.
Ooh. Yeah. Tough. Yeah, so we got through that. And then it was a few years ago now. I was in Arizona with an extra day after a working weekend and decided, you know, I wanted to cross an item off my bucket list and go up in a hot air balloon. And ended up having an accident where I broke both my legs and was in a wheelchair for several months. And so I've been through some things and I've been through them pretty well. And I recognized that the thing that really helped me get through it was what I had learned after I got out of college called choice theory psychology. And that's William Glasser's work. And I studied that from 1987 until now. Glasser passed away in 2013. I became the director of his organization in 2010. It's an international organization, and I deepened my understanding of choice theory. And then when the world trauma happened in 2020, the pandemic, I had most of my work canceled because I was an in-person speaker. Nobody was having speakers or gatherings. And so I had time on my hands. And I don't do well doing nothing. That's just, as any entrepreneur knows, we don't sit around twiddling our thumbs. So I decided I wanted to think about how it was that I really did benefit from choice theory and get through these things. And what were the lessons that I learned? And so I put that together in a program called Mental Freedom. And I've been working with Mental Freedom ever since. I've done some beta groups. I've done some research. I've created a certification program. And it's at the point now where I'm really ready to launch it to the world, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today to tell you about it, because it has been working in a variety of settings. But I actually created it for people in business, not necessarily specifically entrepreneurs, but people successful, smart, intelligent, go-to people.
Yeah.
Who handle everything for everybody. They're the answer person, but they're tortured by something. Usually it's a relationship something. Might be a romantic relationship, might be their child, their parent, and they don't talk to anybody about it because they don't want anybody to know that they're suffering. And so mental freedom is something you can do in 6 sessions, and you don't even have to tell me what you're suffering with. If you're smart enough, you just take what I teach, you put it to use with whatever you're suffering with or whatever the challenge is in your life, and you can fix it yourself. It's DIY.
DIY personal growth and therapy.
Yep. Wow. Do it yourself. And if you want more specific help, of course, we can do it. But it's not required to get relief. And I find that it has been really beneficial for a lot of people. So I'm super happy to talk to people about it.
Wow. Yeah. And yeah, the book's coming out. We're recording this in January, coming out mid-year 2024. We'll put a link in the show notes, pre-order and all that sort of stuff. I think you also have a way to get a free chapter. So I'll make sure we put all those links in the show notes. How do we unpack this? Because there's a lot there. So mostly for business folk, not necessarily entrepreneurs. But so what are some of the tenets that you've sort of, over your experience, you know, you've been an entrepreneur since, 2004? So, you know, it's 20 years now, going on 20 years. Is there certain mindsets, there's certain characteristics, is there some, I don't know how to put my finger on, like, is there something different about business people and entrepreneurs where this idea of the self-created misery is just more amplified? Or, you know, take me through a little bit of that, because as an entrepreneur and knowing a lot of entrepreneurs, we do tend to over-rotate on, you know, achievement, comparison, and that does create a lot of misery and a lot of fear and anxiety around, am I good enough, et cetera. So, would you take us a little bit through that? I'm just curious if there's some things you found that are like, oh yeah, you business and entrepreneur people, man, chill.
Well, first of all, it takes somebody, a particular personality type, to go into business. And so most people who have their own businesses are high power and achievement people. And they have to, by nature, be somewhat lower in survival, because if you're a survival person, you're looking for safety and security. And there is no safety and security, especially in the beginning of owning your own business. It's a big question mark, a big guessing game. So if you fit that profile, it also helps to be, especially in today's day and age, a relationship person, because it's through relationship that people do business. And if you're not good at establishing connections and networking with other business people, it's going to put you at a disadvantage. So if you fit that profile, then as a high achievement person, it's hard for you to reach out and get help. If you need help, unless it's, you know, if you need a plumber, you know to call a plumber. That's a different thing than if you're struggling with something mental or emotional. What you described has been called the imposter syndrome. And we suffer from that. Am I good enough? Who the heck do I think I am? Starting my own business, writing my own book. Who's going to want to read it? Who's going to want to buy what I'm selling?
Oh my gosh, you have the same thoughts in your head as I do.
And how about this one, Jari? What if I get successful? If I get successful, then people are going to know I really don't know what I'm talking about.
I never knew that that was a real thing. I just thought it was mean. And I thought it was like the silliest thing. And so I have a therapist that I work with, you know, weekly. And I'm like, why am I afraid of this? And yeah, you're right. It's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, what happens if the book, the memoir is a New York Times bestseller and I've got to go talk on Oprah?
People yes. realize
that, who is this guy? Like, what the hell? This guy's a lunatic or whatever, you know? It was weird because that was self-inflicted misery or self-created misery. Like,
totally.
I didn't care about that.
Totally. And yeah, we all do it. But I think entrepreneurs have that special angst because they're creators. And as a creator, it's almost like being an artist. You're creating something and you have to count on other people to see your vision, to find it useful, and be willing to pay money for your creation. And it's a very vulnerable position to be in. And the reason you didn't know it was a thing is because it's not the thing that you talk to people about. So you're not talking to your fellow entrepreneurs, hey, were you ever afraid of being discovered as a fraud? Of course you're not going to say that because it puts you in such a vulnerable position. And kudos to you that you have a therapist that you talk to.
Yeah.
Because most people don't. And even if you do, sometimes it feels like we're not getting anywhere. I've had a lot of people come to me and say, my therapist holds my hand while I cry. And I feel like I want to report them because that's not ethical.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought this up because we talked a little bit before we hit record. I interviewed the CEO of Mental, which is a mental health app for men. And that modality of therapy, most men don't resonate with. Just full stop. I can tell you this, for his experience and my experience and just talking to people. So you're right. Like, it's just so fascinating how there's these different modalities and one size doesn't fit all. And I love how you've sort of navigated on, hey, you can help yourself. I'm here to help you, but you can help yourself through this, which I think I'll probably go out. Well, I don't need to go out on a limb. I think most men, I think that's their modality. And what we talked about, his name is Anson. What we talked about was the idea of coach versus your, you know, hold the hand while crying, like the maternal versus paternal modality. And I'm just curious, is that like, how does that resonate with you? And like, have you found that? I mean, because what you said just is spot on, you know?
Yes, but I wouldn't say it's a male trait. I would say it is male energy, but I would also say it's high achievement trait. So if you have women in a power position, they feel the same way. They don't want to go and have somebody hold their hand and say, oh dear, this is so sad. I'm so sad for you. Come back next week. We'll cry again.
Yes.
And the crying purges us momentarily and we feel better. So it feels like, okay, now I have to go out into the big bad world. I do my stuff and I can come back to my safe place. And I can cry, I'll feel better. But you don't need a therapist for that. You can cry in your bedroom. You can cry with your best friend. You can cry with your mother. You don't need to pay somebody to cry with you or to hold your hand. But I thought those high achievement people, they are fixers. They are answer people. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. Tell me how to fix this and I'll fix it. And so I think that counselors are not trained to share what they know with their clients. It's like, this is secret information. Only we have it so that you have to come back to us. Mm. And I have no desire to have lifelong clients. I think that to me, from where I sit, that's unethical. Mm. I want to have clients that I empower to be able to handle this on their own. And if I can't do that, and if what I do isn't working, I'll refer you to someone else that maybe has a different style than me. But I want to work with people who are highly motivated, who want to get better. And one of the things that our counseling field and our society and culture in general has created is a culture of victimhood. And every one of us can tell a story about being a victim. You heard mine. My husband died. I raised my kids alone. All of that. Too. Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah. You and I could probably private pity party all day.
I'm sure we could, but we would never do that because that's not who we are.
It's not who we are.
But there is a lot of benefit to being a victim in our culture. You get attention. People want to hear your story. They might offer you help and you don't even have to ask for it. You can avoid responsibility. You just have a lot of benefit to being in that victim role. So honestly, I could offer mental freedom to everyone in the world, and there's going to be a fraction of people who say, no, thanks. I'm fine just the way I am. I don't want to give up being a victim. They would never say it that way. They don't have that self-awareness about it. But I'm looking for people who don't want to be that, who really want to put the pedal to the metal and get it done and know how to do it the rest of their lives. Because, you know, you might have something today, but next year it might be something different. You won't have to come back. You already have the information. Yeah. So I really think that it's a different approach. I want to help people be able to help themselves and not have to rely.
Yeah. I think to your point, that's that male energy side of it, the kind of high achievement. Because on average, males have the achievement. That's how we have self-worth. So what's the opposite of the high achievement things? Like what the traditional modality of counseling and therapy?
High connection. Yeah. And you can be high achievement and high connection at the same time. But I think when you're talking entrepreneur, you're talking high achievement.
Yeah.
But also some have high connection. Mm. And it's often the women who are more high connected. They want to do the networking meetings and that kind of thing. But there's other things. So in mental freedom, we talk about five basic needs that all people have. Mm-hmm. And I first help people understand themselves through these five basic needs. Mm-hmm. They motivate all of our behavior. And so when you understand what is your highest motivator, it makes sense why you make some of the decisions and the choices that you do. And if your highest motivator, the achievement energy we're talking about, the need name that I use for that is the need for significance. We want to make a difference. We want to be recognized. We want to leave a legacy. We want to have an impact. And that is a need for significance. Now, we all have that need, but some people have it more strongly than others. Another one is connection. We mentioned that. That's the relational need. It could be connection with animals, connection with the environment, connection with your mission. It's just that sense of, I belong here. These are my people. The relationships are important to me. And we talked about survival because that's another one. I call it safety and security because I'm not talking about I need to be alive. I'm talking about I need to feel safe and secure. If you're having trouble with food, clothing, and shelter, mental freedom is not going to be high on your list.
No.
You need food, clothing, and shelter.
Yeah, yeah.
So basic I talk stuff. About safety and security, and those are the people that will never be entrepreneurs. They want the steady job. They might have a side hustle, but they want that paycheck. They want to know, they want the health insurance. They want to know that they have that safety net. Then there's freedom people. And freedom people go into entrepreneurial pursuits also, but without a high significance need, freedom people can get in trouble as entrepreneurs because they'll be on the golf course. They'll be doing all kinds of things that may not contribute to their bottom line because freedom is what they want. I'm a high freedom person myself, and I like not having a boss telling me what to do. That was one of the things that motivated me to go into entrepreneurship. It's like, I'd worked for a couple of bosses in my lifetime, and I didn't like either one of them. I didn't respect them. And it's hard to work for someone that you don't respect. So that was one of the reasons. But if freedom was the only thing that motivated me, then I would just be doing whatever I wanted to do. And it may not have been anything related to the business. Freedom people, they buck the system a lot. They ask a lot of questions. They're the ones that never actually grew out of that two-year-old phase where we say, but why, Mom? Why, Dad? Why is it like that? We're still saying those things. And then the other one, there are people who are strictly motivated by joy. And they are looking for, you know, where do I get my next joyous moment from? And how do I do that? And if you're an entrepreneur and you're lucky enough, your work is your joy. And I know that's true for me. Luckily, when I am working, doing what I love to do, I meet all of my needs. It gives me money, so safety and security is taken care of. I feel like I'm having an impact, making a difference. I'm making connections with my clients and with people who decide they want to be mental freedom practitioners too. And I'm also, I have freedom because I'm doing exactly what I want to do. And there's joy in it for me because I'm fulfilling the mission that I set out to do, which is eradicate the self-created misery in the world. And I'm sure that's not going to happen in my lifetime, but that's the goal of mental freedom. So I'm looking to attract younger people to it that will carry on that mission because, of course, you know, we have that mission and it may never happen because there are people who benefit from their self-created misery and they won't want to give it up.
Yeah. So interesting, because, you know, those five things, significance, connection, safety and security, freedom and joy, you're right. It just resonated with me, this significance thing, because that's the, you know, high achievement type of thing. But the contrast between that and freedom, like true freedom is, I don't have to do any, I do whatever I want. That's not going to make it in the entrepreneur world because there are things you have to do that you're not going to like to do. That's the way it is.
Right.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. And so
there can be conflict. There can be conflict, obviously, between individuals in relationships. One of my biggest conflicts, because I'm a freedom person, it's really hard for me to work with safety and security people because they want details. They want to know everything. If I ask for something, them to do a project, well, how long do you want it to be? How many words? What size font should I use? Do you want color coding? Do you want graphs? Do you want vertical bar graphs, horizontal bar? You know, and I'm like, holy moly, all I want is what I asked for. How you give it to me, that's up to you. And that terrorizes a safety and security person because they want to know what is the safe way to do this. They don't want to be criticized. They don't want to be wrong. So that can be problematic. If you're in a relationship and both of you are high significance people, unless you have a clear division of what area is yours, if you try to be significant in the same areas, you're going to be butting heads all the time. And if you're in a relationship and one is a freedom person and one is a connection person, you could see where that might be a problem.
Yes.
So it has interpersonal implications as well as intrapersonal implications. So you can have conflict in yourself. My two highest needs are connection and freedom, and they conflict a lot. A simple example is I'm a grandmother of eight.
Eight,
yes. I had two sons and they both have four children.
Wow.
So I didn't overdo it in the children department, but they have definitely blessed me with these eight human beings who I love to distraction. But I live in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They live in Pennsylvania. So when I'm in Chicago, I am the professional, I'm the entrepreneur, and I'm meeting my freedom and my significance needs. When I go to Pennsylvania and I spend time with those eight grandbabies, I'm meeting my connection need. My heart is like this. And if I'm there 10 days, it's the perfect amount of time. But if I'm there 11 days, my connection bucket starts to overflow which takes away from my freedom bucket. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a big hurry to get back to Chicago mm-hmm. so that I can get my freedom needs met again. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of a thing that's happening all the mm-hmm. time. And then if you add to it context, you may be in a contextual time-bound period where it's hard for you to meet one of those needs. You and I, after the death of our spouses, connection, I know, had to be hard for you. I know how hard it was for me, even though there were probably hordes of people coming to support you in your grief. Yeah. The one person you wanted there to be with was not there. So connection in that period of time was depleted. And so even though connection isn't high for you, because you've identified significance as high, mm-hmm. it probably felt like your highest need in that period of time because the bucket was not full.
Yeah, totally drained. Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
and
just like,
so,
yeah, so it's the system.
There's a lot of nuances with these needs. And I go through all of that in the Mental Freedom program. It starts there. With understanding, when you know yourself better, it makes it easier to navigate the things that you need to decide to do.
How is this similar to some of the other personality to like Myers-Briggs? You know, I've seen a bunch of these things. I haven't quite seen it like this. I mean, obviously you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and et cetera. And I can see, well, I mean, for business people and just working as a team to you know, your point in relationship, if you're like, well, you know, if you're high in significance and someone else is high in safety and security, you know, this is going to be the challenge is going to be like, just get it done. I don't care how. Well, what do you mean? You know, so what's the, you know, in the business world, they use a lot of Myers-Briggs stuff. Every company I've ever been at, you know, they're like, oh, take this test and see how well you work, whatever. It always seemed to be a little bit shallow because the depth of it was, I don't know, maybe it was just because we just did this one exercise, but I mean, I'm curious, how do you compare and contrast it and how do they complement each other? And like, what have you found as you've been applying this? Like, what are some things that, you know, business people and entrepreneurs should like really understand about it?
Well, I know that there's a lot of personality inventories. I'm familiar with the Myers-Briggs, but there's others that are used in business as well. And there's strength tests, and you learn what your strengths are. There's the Enneagram. There's all kinds of assessments out there. I think that there is not an assessment for the five basic needs of choice theory and the ones that I use in Mental Freedom. And there's a reason for that. So here's the reason. Those other assessments will ask you, do you do this? And then yes or no, do you do this? Or you rank it on a scale. And they come up with a description about you. And often those descriptions are pretty good. But in these needs, there's so much flux. And everything that I said to you is true. But you and I may do exactly the same thing, but for different reasons. So here's an example. Joy. I love joy, but it's not one of my high needs. It doesn't motivate my behavior. I tend to experience joy when I'm with someone that I care about, but it's not that I wake up and say, I got to find some joy today. Like, it's not motivating me. But if you're a person that's motivated by joy, you are motivated. You will not engage in activities that don't bring you some sense of joy. You just won't do it because it's like a horrible existence. That's not the situation. But when I do workshops, I build joy or fun into those workshops, not because it's important for me, but because for two reasons. I want my participants to like me, so I'm doing it for connection, and I'm also doing it for significance, because if you have fun while you're learning, I'm going to look like a good, you know, trainer. So the same behavior could meet different needs in different people, so it makes it very difficult to do a standard test that's going to give you anything that makes a lot of sense. I find the best way for people to really get a sense of their own personality need strengths is in introspection. teach them what the needs are, help them understand the nuances, and let them do that introspection and figure it out for themselves. And if they go on a journey of mental freedom, they may change their minds about those things. Some people build a business, maybe they do build the business for safety and security reasons. They want to have something and that they can count on. And maybe they do it for connection reasons because they want to pass it on to their children. There's all kinds of reasons people may become entrepreneurs. It's not strictly that significance need, although I think probably if we did a percentage, that would be the highest percentage. But there's other reasons people might do the same thing. So it's hard to inventory that or to score that. The other thing, I just want to mention Maslow, because Maslow had this hierarchy from survival, meaning being alive, to self-actualization. And that's a journey not everybody takes. So in his theory, you had to meet one need before you could go to the one above it. And then you had to meet that one before you could go to the next one. In Glasser's needs, these are day-to-day needs that we all need to meet, especially our high ones. We need to meet our high needs every day. And if we don't, we're going to feel out of sorts. And if we go a long time without even one of our lower needs, we're still going to feel out of sorts and we're going to be motivated or pushed to get it met. And that's why we have some challenges in the world, because some people have a lot of choices available to them. So it's easier for them to get their needs met. Other people live in more of an impoverished environment where they don't have a lot of options. And so if they don't have responsible ways to get their needs met, those needs still need to be met. They're going to do it in a less than responsible way. And sometimes it might even be an illegal way. But it's no different from you or I doing it in a socially acceptable way. It's just that we had those paths available to us. So somebody with high need for significance might become the leader of the Bloods or Crips. And we became the leaders of our own company. It's the same thing. The same thing. Just one's on one side of the law, one's on the other side of the law.
It's just interesting that you say that, because I think, you know, and looking at this and, you know, the basic needs of humans, depending on your resource level and where you're at, right? It explains a lot of behavior that I don't think we, especially in Western society, or at least here in the US, I don't know if we do a really good job of sort of calibrating that. And this is the whole, like, a lot of people throw in like free will in this, you know, like, oh, well, you either have it or you don't. If you don't have free will, the bad behaviors, as an example, if you're the, there is no free will camp, well, they're just a victim of their circumstance and their environment. Of course, they're going to do this. You can't hold them accountable to a first order. And the free will, if you have free will, then, well, they should know that they're doing something wrong. And I find this debate fascinating because it depends on who you are on the spectrum of politics, your life experience, as well as your amount of compassion. Because it is 100% obvious to me that your environment does dictate some of your choices. And some of those choices you may or may not have control over. But more importantly, even if you know the right thing to do, it's going to be a lot harder in some situations. And recognizing that, I mean, and you could, I think you could apply this to any sort of situation. Entrepreneurship is a great example. There are entrepreneurs who will win at all costs, even though it could be unethical or even in some cases illegal. I'm just look at some of those folks. Mm-hmm. Sam Brinkman-Fried or whatever, Elizabeth Holmes, like fake it to make it kind of thing. Fake it, you know. And it's a win at all costs, psychopathic to a certain degree, right? But it's interesting that the environment, the mindset, and that these five needs every day, I like the fact, you're right. Maslow is just, you know, kind of this, your whole life's journey, but these five in various stages of your life on a various times, days, whatever time frame. Interesting. Yeah.
You hit on two pieces of mental freedom that I just want to comment on.
Oh, okay.
And it actually goes along with with bringing those two sides together, if you will. So if you don't believe in free will and you think that people are just destined for whatever they're destined for, in mental freedom, the first lesson is about responsibility versus responsibility, which was first coined, as far as I know, by Stephen Covey in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And it just means the ability to respond. And we always have the ability to respond. Doesn't mean we should, just because we can. But the things that we're responsible for, we lose mental freedom when we don't take responsibility for the things we're responsible for. And we are responsible for every single thing we do and every single thing we think. We know that, but we also are responsible for our own happiness. We're responsible for getting our needs met, and we are responsible for the solution to our problems. And when we're having a problem with another person, we often think it's their problem because they're not doing what we want them to do. So the person that I identify as the one who holds the problem is the person who's most upset about it. So if you're upset about something, it's your responsibility to fix that. And when you're in relationship with other people, and I don't care if that's your lover, your child, your coworker, your donor, your investor, you are responsible for your half of that relationship. And what that means in mental freedom is you're responsible for meeting your needs. They aren't. And when you're in relationship with someone, you have a responsibility to not prevent the other person from getting their needs met based on your actions. So that's the responsibility piece. I don't care what kind of an environment you are in, you are responsible for what you do. Okay. The second thing that kind of brings the other side into it is I call it the unconditional trust challenge. And I say we lose mental freedom when we trust people for the wrong thing. And when people say, I trust you, what we're really saying is, think about it. I trust you to be the person I want you to be in my head. Parents going away for the weekend say to their teenage child, I trust you not to have a party. You know they're going to have a party. So saying that, you're just guilting them into not doing it, but it's probably not going to work. So that's the wrong thing. We can trust every single person on the planet to do one thing and one thing only. And that is, at any moment, every person is doing the best they can to get what they want. They're not doing it to get what you want them to want. They're doing the best they can to get what they want. And if we can truly embrace that challenge, we won't take it personally, because we know they're not doing it to me. They're doing it for them. That's an important distinction. You don't have to get defensive. You can develop an understanding of why they did what they did. You can not judge it now as wrong or bad or hurtful to you. And you might develop some compassion and even forgiveness and be able to move forward. Or you change the relationship and you say, because with the unconditional trust challenge comes increased clarity. You see who this person is now. You're not fogged up with the thought of who you want them to be. You see them. And you may say, do I really want to continue on this path with you? Or do I want to not? Or do I want to have less time with you? Or do I want to jump head first all in? Or do I want to end this relationship? Or do I want to have it as a distance thing?
Yeah,
you have all of those choices, but we never make those choices because we're hung up on trusting them to one day become the person we really want them to be. And that really messes with our mental freedom.
Kim, what a great place to end. That was fantastic. Wow, insightful. Everyone should go get the book. Again, I'll put a link in the show notes and where you can pre-order. Always a pleasure. Always learned so much. I just have a newfound appreciation for this whole idea of not to me, but for them. Like, people are getting their need. Like, it's not personal. And why am I taking it that way? I mean, I've been working on that for a long time. And the way you put it, the clarity of that is like something I really need to think about. So again, good luck with the book. Thanks again for your time. just, it's a true pleasure.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur and, frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.